You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online. Thanks for joining us, kpcg.fm. We have a live link also at thetrumpet.com that you can listen to. And also, don't forget about the TuneIn app. That's a good way to take KPCG with you wherever you're going. This is Trumpet Radio Live. Dwight Falk, Abraham Blondeau with you here on this Monday. It was a Father's Day weekend, and so hopefully everybody had a good one. I got to go bowling, which is always a thing I like to do. I don't do it too often, but when I get a chance, I like to do that. So I didn't do great, but I had fun.
Yeah. Well, there's more than one way in striking out in bowling, I guess. But
yeah, we were talking about it earlier and how those monitors that keep the score, they always have those funny animations. And if you do well, they've got a nice animation, but they also have a, you know, bad ones when you, well, bad in the sense that they're, it's not fun to watch a cartoon mock you after you've missed the pins.
Yeah, that's the most vexing part. I don't care if people make fun of me, but you see those little animated pins make fun of you on the screen, and it's, and they're right, but there's nothing you can do. But
got to draw the line somewhere. And of course, the big news in sports over the weekend was the Cleveland Cavaliers finally won the NBA championship.
Yes.
Cleveland hadn't won a professional sports championship in like 50 some years. So
I think it was 146 seasons.
Wow.
Of like their different sports teams.
Yeah, all the sports teams combined. So, hey, good. Yeah, it's happy for them. Good news for them. Sad news for the Golden State Warriors, though. But anyway, that's done with. Now on to other things. It's going to be a hot week this week. All across the southwestern United States in particular, there's been record heat, and it's going to be hot here in Oklahoma as well, but record highs out there in the southwest. If you're out Palm Springs, that's going to be 118 this week. Las Vegas, 113. Phoenix, 115. Tucson, 110. And, of course, Death Valley, 125. Not that you ever expect it to be nice in Death Valley, probably, but 125. So you start getting up into those temperatures, and it becomes a serious life and death issue in some cases.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about boiling water boils at 100, and our bodies are mostly made of water, or there's lots of water in it. So, 100 degrees Celsius.
I was going to say.
Sorry, I was getting... My bad. That's a Canadian.
It's a Canadian thing. Yeah.
Yes,
100 Celsius. Yeah,
maybe that's why it's such big news in Canada. Because we think everyone's boiling to death.
How are they surviving? Yeah. Fahrenheit Celsius, right?
But yeah, I mean, it's still a serious thing. I mean, heat stroke can happen so quickly, and it's just very difficult to just function outdoors in that kind of weather.
Yeah, there was a several summers back, we had a really hot stretch here in Oklahoma. And it was about 111, I think. And I remember being outside. I didn't do anything. I was just, it was like at a get together, and I was sitting under a tent. So it was shaded. I drank plenty of fluids. I still got kind of sick feeling. It's just too much heat. It was about 111, I think. And so I look at some of these temperatures and I just think, wow, you know, it's going to be. Now it's hot out there in Palm Springs and people are kind of used to it, but, and it's not quite as humid, but still, that's, dangerous heat. So be careful if you're out there in those areas, and hopefully everybody's air conditioning is working.
Yeah.
So she kind of reminds me of a funny story. We were out in the Palm Springs area last year, and we got into the car, and it was pretty hot. So I turned the air conditioner up all the way, of course. And as we're driving probably 5 minutes down the road, my son, who was about 9 at the time, he said, he's like, you know, I think I'm adjusting to the heat. Like it doesn't feel quite as bad as it did. So the air conditioner is going full blast. That's why it's getting cooler in the vehicle. So
yeah.
He thought he was acclimating to his surroundings, but he was not. So, yeah, you need air conditioning on those days. Pretty violent weekend again in Chicago. This doesn't make the news as much as it should, it seems like, but major violence. This is from the Chicago Tribune. 13 dead, at least 41 hurt in weekend shootings. 13 people were shot to death, and at least 41 others, including a 3-year-old boy, have been wounded in separate shootings across the city during the weekend between 5 p.m. Friday and early Monday morning. So, of course, 2 weeks or a week ago, the Orlando shooting happened, which is a major deal, obviously. But these types of shootings are happening almost every weekend in Chicago.
Yeah, if you look at the amount of people who have been killed or wounded in Chicago. I mean, it's, I don't know the statistics off the top of my head.
1,780 this year.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, that's that's a huge story. I mean, we're only about halfway. We're in June. So that's just something you don't expect to happen in America. That's not something we're used to talking about or seeing happen in front of us. I mean, this kind of violence you expect to see in Iraq or Afghanistan, those sort of places where they're in the midst of war. But Chicago is becoming a war zone. And I mean, there's the casualty counts to prove it.
Yeah, there's 1,780 people that have been shot across the city this year. Now, not all of them have died, but that's how many have been shot. There's about 1,500 people that have been killed in Iraq this year in total, that in terms of violence, whether it be shooting, whether it be a car bomb. They have, you know, a lot of things happening there. So obviously it's a higher death count. But still, when you just look at injuries, those numbers aren't that far apart. And again, that's Iraq is a war zone still. And Chicago, in the same way, is a war zone. That's one city, albeit it's a big one, but one city in America. And they're having just a lot of violence there. So every weekend, it's like if I were in that area, I think I'd batten down the hatches on the weekend, get inside and stay put.
Yeah. Well, actually, it reminds me of a point from I'm reading a book right now on the Iraq War, a part of it, and it's just been going through how the U.S. military tried to deal with insurgents and violence in the city, and a lot of it reminds me of this, and even the U.S. Army couldn't stop it, and they were using tanks, Bradleys, Humvees. I mean, if they used full force, they could have flattened the city, but just trying to do it like a police force, in other words, trying to stop the insurgents using police-like tactics, they couldn't stop it. And the city they were in, Fallujah, that's about 280,000 people at the time in 2004. We're talking about Chicago. Huge city. And the U.S. Army couldn't stop it until they actually conquered the whole city in the full-out war. So when we're talking about stopping this level of violence and with the Chicago Police Department, I mean, that's a huge task and something that almost seems unattainable for them.
And then they also have the added pressure of the racism issue, where or police brutality, where they have to be careful in how they handle situations, or else somebody's going to be there with their phone taping it, and then it'll become an issue as well. Tough job there in Chicago. So anyway, another violent weekend, unfortunately. Here's an interesting headline from the Washington Post in relation to Israel. Israel is reportedly constructing an underground wall around Gaza. So they're going underground, which makes sense because of the tunneling. They say Israel is reportedly constructing a deep underground wall around the Gaza Strip in an attempt to counter the threat of assault tunnels built by Hamas militants who rule the coastal enclave. The move, which comes almost 2 years after Israel fought a deadly 50-day war with Hamas in Gaza, was reported over there in Israel. Israel's defense ministry declined to comment on the initiative. So here in the U.S., we talk about building walls above ground on the border, and here Israel has to build walls underground to prevent the tunneling. And actually, that might not be a bad idea here in the U.S. too, because of all those drug tunnels under the border.
Right, yeah. It is amazing how similar it is in many ways. If you do build a wall trying to keep anything out, the next reaction is to go underneath. It's even true with animals too.
Yeah.
Like if you build a fence for your dog, he's going to tunnel and go underneath it. But with this, it's obviously a lot more serious. You're talking about here in Hamas, that their tunnels have proven very effective. So has the wall, though, for Israel. It actually has helped a lot of stop a lot of terrorism or make it more difficult. And in the U.S. here, we haven't built a total wall per se, but there have been those huge drug tunnels that are pretty spectacular, actually, at how big they are and how much drugs can move through them. So this is just the next step, logical step in that kind of security. But even then, it's still temporary because, as proven with these tunnels, the enemies just, or the people trying to get into your country, are going to find another way to do it.
Yeah, at what point do you start to build like a floor way underground, and then you put a top on it, and then you're in a box?
Yeah.
You're in your safe box. It's that sounds pretty ridiculous. I'm sure it wouldn't go that far, but in some ways you almost have to. It just shows the relentless pursuit of Hamas going after Israel there. They're not tunneling in there so they can sneak in presents and, you know, food. it's to take their terrorism in there. That's what they're doing, obviously.
Yeah, well, if you think about how much money Hamas gets from the world or the Gaza Strip, it might not go to Hamas, quote unquote. It might go to the PA. But if you look at how those people live, I mean, some money does trickle down to them. But a lot of it goes to paying for the deaths of terrorists, attacks, suicide bombers, and then building these tunnels. I mean, it's not cheap to build an underground tunnel with U.S. or with the Israeli military right there. I mean, it's an expensive project, but they're doing it all the time. So all this money coming in from the European Union, aid groups, all these different people, it's well-intentioned, but there's pretty obvious fruits of where it's going to. And it's, like you said, it really does highlight just how driven Hamas is to fight Israel. That's their whole purpose for existence. And they're going to use all the resources they have to do it.
We've got a reporter on the ground over there, Brent Nachtigall, and he writes for thetrumpet.com, and he's on the Trumpet Hour program as well. So make sure you check thetrumpet.com for some of his stories. He's there seeing some of these things firsthand, and so he has a good eyewitness accounts of different events happening there in Israel. And it's always a real hot spot as far as the news is concerned. Here's another one from the Washington Post. This is a big news this week. On eve of vote, Brits search their hearts for Europeanness and come up empty. This is says to beat back the marauding hordes of continental Europe, the medieval English built an immense stone castle atop the sheer white cliffs of Dover with 21-foot thick walls and royal soldiers on constant watch for anyone who dared trespass upon their blessedly detached isle. 8 centuries later, the modern English are still not quite sure whether the people across the water are friend or foe. This man over there is a young man. His name is Derek Beach. He said, our ancient enemies will never cease to be our enemies as far as I'm concerned, and he nodded toward the 20-mile-wide channel separating historic but faded British coastal town from the European mainland. He said, I'd like to think France is an ally, I suppose, but Germany still has ideas of expansion. That's a pretty good take, I think, from him.
Yeah, it's, I think, a pretty good analysis, and I think it's pretty obvious, though. I think everyone who realistically understands what's going on knows that Germany is the head of the EU now. They're the ones that call the shots. It is interesting because I did, there's an article by Neil Ferguson written yesterday, I think, where he says Britain should stay in Europe because it's the only way to counter German nationalism, which is on the rise. So he said the only way to counter the rise of Germany is a united Europe. But I mean, that chance is already gone. Even Margaret Thatcher knew that, where she knew that the European economic community in the 80s was anchored to Germany and not, and that Germany wasn't anchored to Europe. So it is a tough position because for Britain, because historically they have been the counter to Europe. They've been a nation that's been able to stand up to dictators. They're the last stand, per se, because of their geographic isolation. But now it's a choice of whether to join a united cause, or do you still stand aloof and fulfill that role that you did for so many generations? And both have their pros and cons, but and you can make all the economic arguments you want, but when it comes to countering the power of Germany, it's something that can have pretty big consequences.
So that vote for whether Britain stays in the European Union or leaves, that's this Thursday, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's going to be big news, so we'll definitely be watching that. And, of course, we have a sister campus over there in Edstone, England, so they're watching that firsthand. They're right there as well. So really interesting. This is an interesting write-up. Abraham, you forwarded this one on. This is from taskandpurpose.com, and it has to do with this gun debate that's going on. And, of course, most in the media, they are pushing for restriction on guns. And so they try to write a few pieces about that. Sometimes maybe a little more effective, sometimes kind of embarrassing. This one's embarrassing. A journalist for the New York Daily News wrote that shooting an AR-15 was, quote, horrifying, dangerous, and very, very loud. And then he claimed that he had a post-traumatic stress disorder from just firing the weapon, which is he's a very fragile individual, apparently.
Yes.
He said this reporter, he said, it shooting this weapon, he said, it feels like a bazooka and sounds like a cannon. So that sounds interesting. And then the writer from Task and Purpose says, yes, that was written by a full-grown man about a rifle I once saw a two-year-old shoot with ease on a private gun range in Colorado. I don't know how old the other reporter is. Maybe he's younger than two. This leads me, he says, to immediately assume three things. First, Kunstmann, the writer, has never fired a bazooka. Second, he has never heard a cannon. And third, his ability to use his five senses to assess the physical world is impaired to the point of uselessness, or at least for a guy whose job is to report on and write about that world. And he says the overblown assessment doesn't stop there. Not only does he claim the rifle's recoil bruised his shoulder, which, unless you have the skin of a newborn baby, is nearly impossible, he claims the explosions of the rifle's report gave him a temporary case of post-traumatic stress disorder. So, again, not to jump into it in terms of, you know, whether these weapons should be out there or not, but when somebody writes to Pete that it's this ridiculous, I think it just even undercuts their argument for gun control.
Yeah. I mean, this is laughable. It's like something you might read on The Onion when I first saw this and read about it, because, I don't know a lot about guns or anything like that, but just the fact that it would be described in such a way, and that a full-grown man would use such dramatic language to fire one of the easiest and lightest weapons the U.S. U.S. produces, and especially for the writer from that article, he's an ex-army, from the U.S. Army. And for these men who fire much bigger caliber weapons all the time, who've been in combat, who have had RPGs explode beside them. And even a couple of weeks ago, talking about people who actually have post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, it's just foolish to compare your experience with that when you're just firing a dozen rounds at a paper target in a comfortable USA. I mean, it's just a ridiculous assessment, just trying to draw in people to your own opinion on the matter. And I think it is dishonorable to describe it in such a way, especially for people who actually have some pretty serious problems with post-traumatic stress disorder or memories of actual combat.
Yeah. Can you have PTSD temporarily?
No, you can't.
Just for a moment, for a fleeting moment in time, I had this thing. Yeah, really, really sad write-up. I think we were talking about it earlier, and I think that journalists are very eager to try to write some, like, groundbreaking piece that, you know, gets their name out there. And this is just foolishness. You know, it's just the guy went to a gun range, he shot the weapon, and he just over-dramatized the effect of it to the point where it's just silly. So, and I mean, it's New York Daily News. I mean, it's somewhat reputable, I guess, on you know, potentially.
Right.
So, anyway, feels like a bazooka, sounds like a cannon. Poor guy. I hope he never had to drive a car. Those things,
that's right.
The engine turns on, it gets loud, scary. Yeah.
Backfire could give him bad nightmares for a year.
It could, yeah.
It does remind me of something I read in the book. Some British special forces went to South America, and they were helping train some men to help with drug busts. And these guys, they've never been in the army before, the young men they were training, but they watched all the movies. So they came with all the big equipment. They were firing their weapons like they knew what they were doing. So all the British guys, they had them, all of them line up or go in formation in a big square. Then they exploded plastic explosives around them far enough away where it wouldn't hurt them, but so they feel the explosion and the sound of it. And when they detonated them, all the men dove on the ground. Some of them were crying, asking like for their mom. And these are like grown men, like 20 to 30 years old. And they had a good laugh, just showing like how ridiculous their bravado was, because they didn't know what they were doing. But it just reminds me of this, where if you actually hear the real sounds of battle and the actual trauma that can be experienced by it. Just firing an AR-15 is just a laughing joke,
and it is insulting, like you say, to people that actually have PTSD and actually have been in battle. It's just a real shame to try to equate their experience with an afternoon at the gun range. So anyway, that's an interesting take on that. Here's one other one. This is a ridiculous story. A man caught shoplifting incredible amount of meat. You don't think of people stealing meat, but I guess if you're hungry, that's what you do. But it was a lot of meat. It says an identified man in a red sports jersey was caught trying to shoplift an astonishing amount of meat. A video that is now going viral shows a store employee approach the man as he attempts to walk out, and the employee says, "I got you." He says, "I don't care what you are. This is about the third or fourth time you've done this to me. You should be going to jail." I don't know why he said, "I don't care what you are." I don't know what that means.
Yeah, neither do I. He's hopefully human, if that's what
I think he was, yeah, as far as I could tell. It says, after a brief exchange, the employee says, "Give me that now." What happens next, they say, is nothing short of incredible. The gentleman in question then proceeds to take package after package of assorted types of raw meats, including a full rack of ribs, from his pants. He had them in his pants. So the video, of course, they put on Facebook, and it has 63 million views. So those are the things that people are interested in. It says it's unclear where the incident took place or if charges were filed. So apparently this guy has been visiting this store and just stealing a lot of meat by putting them inside of his sweatpants.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Actually, this is interesting because I used to work at a food supermarket, and for a while we had a big problem of people, they'd fill up their carts with whatever they wanted. Actually, a lot of meats, because the meat's more expensive, they actually steal that quite often in different parts, regions of the country, but they load up their cart and just kind of loiter around where the doors are. Mm-hmm. Then when the car pulls up, they just dash outside and like dump the cart into the car and then drive off.
Really?
So it was a big problem for a while. But it's pretty hard to pull off because even if you get away with it, the cameras around the store will see you. And the other big thing was the makeup gets stolen a lot, which is surprising because I don't think it's that expensive. I've never used it, so I don't know. But
thank you for sharing that part. Yeah.
Just so everyone is aware of that. But you'll see the empty wrappers all over the store, and you can always tell because it's not obvious where like half the girl's face is done and the other half isn't. But they go in there and they like they smile at you. They're really nice, but then they're like putting stuff in their bag and then they leave the store really quickly. So shoplifting is pretty serious, but it's not as comical as this was, but it is pretty amazing that people go to those lengths to get those things.
People have all kinds of scams. I used to work retail when I was a teenager, and they tried to teach us about what they're trying to pull. Some people would come in there with their own they have this little gun that puts the tags on things,
right?
And they just mark everything way down and then try to buy it. Or they'd switch tags, and so you were always supposed to like make sure that the numbers matched up with the item, because they would come in there and they'd try to switch all the tags around and buy something that's more expensive more cheaply. So there's all kinds of things people do. There's this one lady I remember. I used to get to work the service desk, which was fun because time actually went faster when you worked the service desk. And she would come through and buy thousands of dollars worth of stuff, and then the next day she'd bring it all back. She just kept doing it. I don't know what her deal was. And it got to the point where she was actually banned from the store. They wouldn't allow her to come there anymore. So I don't know exactly what her thing was. Like if she just enjoyed the shopping and then felt bad about it. But she just over and over again would do the same thing. So,
well, I think some people with clothing, they buy something, they'll wear it once and then return it.
That could be.
I don't know how that applies to everything else. I do remember one story, though. Or one time where someone bought a can opener and they came back to the store, they were trying to return it and it had food on it still. And they're like, "Oh, I didn't use it. Like, I don't want it anymore. I want to return it." And he's like, "Well, sir, there's food on it. Like, you obviously used it at least once."
Right.
And it costs like $3 or $4.
Yeah.
But he wanted his money back. So, you'll encounter a lot of interesting things at the service desk.
It's interesting, too, because people get mad at times, a lot of times just because they're trying to get away with something, or and they're not. And they always, their final retort is always like, I'll never shop here again. And I always thought, nope, why would that matter to anyone? You know, there's thousands of people that come in here. Whether you come back or not makes no difference.
Yeah.
Especially to me, you know, 17, I'm getting my $6 an hour. I don't care if you come back or not. But anyway, you should try to have good customer service. But yeah, some people were really, they would get belligerent about certain things. And it's interesting. But yeah, this guy was trying to get a lot of meat out of the store. And apparently he was just doing it over and over again. So you got to keep your eye out, I guess, when you work in retail and watch for those things.